Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar with Travis McCloud. I bet you thought I had quit doing these. I guess I did too, because it's been a long time since I've done one of these episodes. So I figured I should probably do one. And I don't know if a lot of you are aware, but recently I have started a new podcast called Life in Pictures, where I, along with my wife, talk about movies that we watch, because we watch a lot of movies and shows and other things. So I've been working on that a little more consistently than this, but I figured I should probably also get back to doing this at least every once in a while. And then I remembered that this year is the 25th anniversary, somehow, of one of my favorite albums of all time. So I thought that would be a good topic to cover here. And that album is the album Nimrod by Green Day. Now, if you don't know this about me, Green Day is one of my favorite bands of all time. They just are. I don't know. I think that might be the case if you're my age. Maybe if you're not my age, because they've been pretty popular among several different generations. So but I think they're one of the greatest bands, and this is one of my favorite albums of theirs that they've done. So I thought it would be cool to kind of do an episode dedicated to that. Maybe just a little bit of background about my experience becoming a Green Day fan. I kind of backed into it. I remember when I was in the fifth grade, I think it was, I had never heard of them before. And, you know, I mean, not that they'd been around that long as a mainstream popular band, but at that time in my life, I wasn't really listening to current music a lot. I listened to a lot of oldies back then. And I remember there was this kid in my class, and he was always talking about them. And I think one day, just to kind of get under his skin, I learned the words to Basket Case, and I came in and said, "Hey, I know all of the words to this song." And then from there, I just kind of started listening to the CDs, because we had Dookie, their CD, in my house somehow. I don't know. It just appeared. I don't know where it came from. I think somebody maybe left it there one day. And so I listened to the rest of that, and I thought it was pretty good. And then Insomniac came out the next year, and I was starting middle school, and everybody had that album. And so I got that too. And that was about the same time that I started playing the guitar, and I learned a lot of their songs on the guitar, and they've had a big influence on just me as a musician. It's kind of hard to remember a time where they weren't in my life, you know, because I guess I started listening to them when I was about 10 years old, so I was very young. And so anyway, so Nimrod came out in 1997. It was released October 14th, 1997, which was the last year. I was in my last year of middle school at that time. This was their third major label album, their fifth overall. And I remember at the time, it's weird how, you know, when you're a kid, things kind of slow down, because it seemed like it had been an eternity since they had released an album, even though it had only been like a couple of years. And I remember I had gotten really big into Oasis around that same time period. And they're another one of my favorite bands. I would say them, Green Day, and the Beatles are probably my three favorites. And I remember when they were saying this album was coming out, and I was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll check it out, you know, whatever. I remember also like wanting to hear it like really bad. And so this was obviously pre-internet, but the internet was still very kind of new. You definitely weren't logging onto the internet and downloading songs or streaming songs or anything like that. I think about the best you could get was if your friend of yours had the CD, you could make a copy of it on a cassette tape. That was about as close to file sharing as we had back then. And none of my friends had this album, or if they did, they weren't sharing it. So I hadn't been able to hear it yet. I know they had released a video for Hitchin' a Ride on MTV, and of course on MTV, back when MTV played music videos. And I just remember thinking like, oh, that's really cool, they're back, and wanting the album and everything. And so I remember we had gone on a trip, and we met up with some friends of ours at a mall in the place that we went. And my brother and I and our friend kind of went off on our own, and my parents and their parents went off on their own. And my dad said, hey, here's $20, you know, so you can go get food and whatever you want to do. And so instead of taking that $20 and buying food, I went straight to the record store and bought this album. And I remember trying to hide it because I didn't want them to know that I spent the food money on this album. But it was, I stand by that decision. It was a good decision. I was hungry that night, but it's fine. I got over it. And so that was pretty neat. If you want to hear this album, music today, you're not going to have to take $20 and spend your dinner money on it anymore. It's a lot easier to access now. You can stream it on pretty much any platform you want. I think there, it might even be up on YouTube. Somebody's probably uploaded it. You can of course go buy a CD if you want to, if you want to do it the old fashioned way. But the cool thing is that since it's 25 years later now, Green Day actually has a whole collection of 25th anniversary merchandise. So they have a new special edition of this album that comes with the album as it was released, and they have one of the demos from those recording sessions, and I think there's a live album on there as well. They have some t-shirts you can buy. They got all kinds of stuff. I'm not getting paid to say this. I just wanted to put that out there because I think it's pretty cool and was actually the thing that made me realize it was 25 years later. It's hard to believe because it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but it has. So if you, I'm thinking I'm probably going to pick up the CD package because I would like to hear those demos. I think that's really cool when they do that and you can hear demos of songs and you sort of get to hear the creative process of like, oh, this demo sounds different than the finished product. Oasis actually did that a few years ago with their album Be Here Now, and I bought it specifically so I could hear the demos, and it was really neat to hear that whole album, but the earlier versions of like, okay, this is what it sounded like when they were first putting it together versus what you already know it became. I personally think that's a cool thing to hear. So anyway, if you want to check that out, I think all of those packages are going to be released early next year, which is in a few days now. I think they're going to be shipping in like February, but it's on greenday.com. Where else? So check that out if you that sounds interesting to you. And if not, then, you know, just stream it wherever you want. It's good music. So a little bit about this album. It was recorded in Conway Recording Studios, which is in California. I believe it's in Hollywood. The first place I was kind of looking up info on this said Los Angeles, but the actual website for the studio, I'm pretty sure says Hollywood. And I think that's pretty neat that the studio is still around. I guess you could even go record there if you are also a musician. They have an email address to find out about booking. I'm sure it's probably not something you would just take lightly. It's, you know, but that would be pretty neat if you were going to go record anyway. Be like, hey, I recorded in that same studio that Green Day did. Maybe it'd give you some good mojo on your record. Who knows? But anyway, Conway Recording Studios, Los Angeles, or Hollywood, depending. I don't know. I've never been out there, so I'm not really sure. Maybe it's not much of a difference. It was recorded between March and July of 1997 and then released in October of 1997. And from what I've read, apparently they sort of took a little more of their time. They were kind of recovering from a little bit of burnout from doing the all of the shows and everything for Insomniac. And apparently the approach that they took to this record was, instead of trying to write a whole record, they just focused on writing songs. And that's one of the cool things about this record, is it kind of branches out a little bit. It's not really like one particular style the whole way through. Like when you listen to like Dookie or Insomniac, or Kerplunk or 1039 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours, which is actually a compilation of EPs put together to make an LP. You can kind of hear a consistent theme. And this is kind of the first time that I remember them really branching out to where it's like, oh, well, here's kind of a punk song like you're used to, and then here's one that has, you know, horns in it, and this one has violins in it, and, you know, this one has an acoustic guitar in it. And it was really cool to see them branch out. And I thought that was pretty neat. One of the things I also remember at the time was, and I always like to do this being a musician myself, just seeing the different gear that bands use. And so for this record, from what I've been able to read and from what I've been able to recollect, Billy Joe used Les Paul's a Jaguar, his Fernandez Strat copy with all the stickers on it, which is called Blue, some Gibson hollow bodies, and a guitar called Frankenstein, which is called that because it's a Fender made up of all different types of Fender parts. And I just remember at the time when I was reading that he had used Les Pauls and stuff, it just blew my mind because, you know, I was, I guess, 13 years old and I'd been playing guitar for a couple of years. And I don't know, I guess just because I was young or inexperienced or whatever it was, but I just thought, oh, well, he has that one Fernandez guitar and that's his guitar and that's the one that he plays. And I was like, oh, wow, he used a Les Paul. That's crazy. I didn't think he had another guitar. I don't know why I thought that. It's not like he wouldn't have access to it, but for some reason in my mind at that age, I was like, nope, that's the one I saw him on stage with. That's the only one he has. So that was interesting to kind of see the different equipment that he used. I also remember hearing about that Frankenstein guitar and thinking that was really cool because that was the first time I had ever been introduced to the concept of like you could build a guitar yourself, or like, you know, they call a lot of the slang for this is called a parts caster. And I thought that was really cool. It's like, oh, I had all these parts laying around and now I built it into a whole guitar. And I don't know, maybe that's another one of those things that like now it seems obvious, but at the time I'd never heard of that before. I thought that was pretty cool. I believe Mike used precision basses mostly on this album. It seems like he uses precision basses a lot, or at least he was in this time in the band. I'm pretty sure he now has his own signature bass with Fender that he uses quite a bit. And Trey used Slingerland drums and Zildjian cymbals. I'm pretty sure now he uses SJC drums. And I believe he has his own signature set. At the time, or not too long after this, he had a signature Slingerland set as well, which was called the Spitfire series. I don't know if it's a series, but it said Spitfire on it. And I remember wanting those drums like really bad. I never got them. But I remember I had never really heard a Slingerland before I saw him play them. And I just thought, oh, those are really cool drums. I bet they must be really nice if Trey Cool plays them. And so I just, you know, I've always kind of enjoyed seeing the different gear. Whenever I go to concerts, I'm always looking, what kind of guitar does that guy have? What kind of amp are they playing through? What kind of effects are they using? You know, that's always interesting to me as a musician. So that was kind of interesting to, you know, I didn't do a whole lot of research for this episode, but just back then I remember reading in the guitar magazines and things about how they did it and what kind of equipment they use, and I always like to find that out. Well, some more information about this album. The highest, I don't know if it's the highest chart position, but it debuted at number 10 on the Billboard charts. I haven't been able to find it going higher than 10. Maybe it did. I don't know. But it eventually would end up going triple platinum in the US. And Time of Your Life, which is a single everybody is probably familiar with at this point, sold 5 million copies. So 5 times platinum in the US, which is more than the whole album itself. It also went multi-platinum, platinum, or gold in the UK, Japan, Canada, Australia, and Spain. It was a very successful album. It wasn't the same type of album as like an American Idiot or a 21st Century Breakdown, where they're sweeping the Grammys and that kind of thing, but it was no slouch either. Some notable awards that it won. I couldn't really find too many awards per se. I don't think it won a Grammy or anything. I didn't research this super crazy in depth. Apparently Time of Your Life won an MTV Video Music Award in 1998. That was the only one I could find that I could confirm with a reputable source. But also it just kind of goes to show you awards don't necessarily mean that it's not good. Personally, I think this is one of my favorite eras of Green Day. I think they were starting to mature and branch out and really hit their stride. But they were still kind of true to themselves. Like, I sort of felt like, you know, when they made their major label debut, they blew up and they got really big, really fast. And a lot of, you know, some people call them sellouts or whatever. And I kind of got the impression that it was like, we're just doing what we're doing. We can't really help it if we're successful at it. And I remember when American Idiot came out, it kind of seemed like they were selling out a little bit, like they were leaning into it a little more. And I thought this one was just like the same kind of vein. Like, we're still just doing our thing. This is us. Whether you like it or not, what you see is what you get. And don't count us out yet, because we're not, you know, we're not just going to be one dimensional. And they really, like I was saying before, they really branched out a lot on this album. And it was cool to hear. The singles from this album were Hitchin' a Ride, Redundant, Time of Your Life, and Nice Guys Finish Last. So Hitchin' a Ride was the first single I remember coming out. And I remember the video was on MTV. Redundant also had a video. I guess all of these had videos. Redundant had a video on MTV. Next. I'm trying to remember the order these went in. I want to say it was Hitchin' a Ride, Redundant, Nice Guys Finish Last, and then Time of Your Life, but I might be wrong about that. But I remember in the video for Redundant, it was kind of cool because it was just like the same background over and over again. And like I said, at the time I was young and I didn't know what the word redundant meant. So that taught me what that word meant by seeing that video. Let's see. Time of Your Life. I think everybody's familiar with that song and seen that video. Nice Guys Finish Last was that song was actually featured on the Varsity Blues movie soundtrack. And the video is sort of in that same kind of high school football themed vein. And that was the way that I heard of the movie Varsity Blues. I hadn't heard of that until I saw that their song was going to be on the soundtrack. And that's the only way I knew what it was, even though it was kind of a popular movie with my age group around that time. the tour that they went on to, support this album. I couldn't really find a whole lot of definitive data on this. I'm assuming it went from 97 to 99 because their next album Warning came out in 2000. So, you know, definitely wasn't any later than 99. Some notable things from this tour is on November 2nd, 1997, they played the Buzz Bake Sale at Coral Sky Amphitheater in West Palm Beach, Florida. And what that is there used to be a radio station down there called 103.1 The Buzz. And that was like the coolest radio station that you could listen to. They had all of the new music, the new alternative music. And so they had this concert every year. It was called the Buzz Bake Sale. And they had all of these bands that played. It was like a big festival kind of thing. And so I went to it. And I went there just to see Green Day. And this was the first time that I had ever seen Green Day live. I remember they had come a couple of years earlier to the West Palm Beach Auditorium. And I did not know that they were going to come there. Because, again, this was back in the mid-90s. The internet wasn't like what it is today. You know, you didn't get Facebook notifications and stuff on your cell phone. You didn't have a cell phone. Most people didn't even have a computer. If you did, there wasn't much on it. You didn't necessarily always hear about when bands were coming or when tickets were going to go on sale or when tickets did go on sale. You had to actually go to a store and wait in line and buy tickets. So I didn't find out that they were coming until those tickets were already long gone. And so I didn't get to go to that show. So when they came around again, I was like, I really want to go see them. And I remember hearing they were coming to Orlando and that they were coming to a few other places, but not necessarily around where I was. And then it was announced that they were going to play at the bake sale. And I said, oh, man, I'm going to that. So I remember that was one of my first concerts that I went to, like that I wanted to go to. And I actually got the tickets and went to myself. And I just remember that was like one of the greatest shows I had ever seen. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here watching this show. And I remember just thinking at the time, like, oh, you know, that'd be so cool if like in the middle of the show, he was like, hey, does anybody know how to play the guitar? And then I'd be like, I know how to play all of the songs. And then he picks me to do it. And then he actually does do that as part of the show, which I did not know at the time. I have, side note, I've seen Green Day, I think, 7 times, and I've never been picked to play the guitar. But such is life, I guess. One time, I even brought a sign that said, I want to play blue, but it didn't work. Maybe someday, who knows. But yeah, I just remember that concert being really cool, and I remember having the newspaper article of it up on my wall in my bedroom for several years after that. And that was a lot of fun. Superdrag was the opening act for them. I honestly remember their name and not much else, but they were the opening act on that tour, or at least on the part of the tour that I saw. I remember that they also had a concert on MTV called Live from the 10 Spot. And I remember watching, like staying up late to watch that. And I think I still have that somewhere on a VHS tape. And I remember thinking that was a really cool show. They played it at the Bottom of the Hill Club in, I believe, San Francisco. And it was this really small kind of intimate club, especially for like a band of their stature at the time. And I believe that's because they came from that kind of punk rock, those roots. And so they wanted to try to keep it that way as long as they could. I remember, you know, when they came through on that tour that I missed out on, their tickets were still $15 a piece. I think I paid $15 to go see them at the bake sale, even though they were like a huge band by then. They were still trying to kind of keep that punk rock ethos going. And I remember Mike broke his nose during the show on MTV, and Billy Joe forgot the lyrics to Brain Stew. And this was the first time I heard the song Big Yellow Taxi, and I didn't know what it was. Billy Joe did a little snippet of it before The Grouch, and I remember thinking that was a really cool song, and I'd never heard the original one or knew anything about it. And when I recorded my first album, I actually did that same thing on my album, the Green Day version. And then I took it off of the final album because I figured, well, just on the off chance that this album blows up, then I don't want to get sued for taking someone else's song or something, which I guess luckily it didn't blow up. So I'm okay. Neither Green Day nor Joni Mitchell sued me, so I'm doing all right. But yeah, so if you have a version of that album with that on it, then you got a rare one, because I don't even have that version anymore. Yeah, and then another thing that happened on that tour, I remember at the K-Rock Weenie Roast, there was a big fight. The bass player from Third Eye Blind came out and bear hugged Mike on stage, and then there was some big fight backstage. Someone threw a beer bottle at Mike and like cracked his head open or something, and I remember reading about that and saying like, oh, screw Third Eye Blind, I hate those guys now. It seems kind of stupid in retrospect, but like I said, I was 13, 14 at the time, so probably an appropriate reaction for that age. I'm pretty sure that they also played New Year's Eve 1999 on MTV. So this would have been probably not too long before Warning came out, kind of at the tail end of the Nimrod days. And I remember them playing Scattered, which I don't think was released as a single, but it's a pretty great song. And I remember Billy Joe talking about how great he thought it was as well. Not bragging, just saying that, you know, he wrote a good song. And I agree, it is a good song. And I remember him playing this Fender Telecaster that you didn't normally see him play. And it looked really cool because it had like a custom pickguard on it. It was black and white. And I didn't know it was a Telecaster at the time. I thought it was some kind of offset model because it didn't have the traditional pickups or Telecaster pickguard that would normally have. And then I also remember them, Billy Joe played Time of Your Life by himself later on in the night on a pink Stratocaster with like distortion and stuff. And then he stopped in the middle of the song because he was so drunk he was going to fall over. And he just told everybody he was really messed up. Side note, one of my other favorite bands, Limp Bizkit, played New Year's Eve 1999. And they played, you know, the Prince song, you know, We're Gonna Party Like It's 1999. And I remember at the time, I didn't really know much about them. And I remember like hearing they were going to be on the show and thinking like, this is probably going to end up being one of my favorite bands or something. And I don't even appreciate it right now. And sure enough, they sure did end up becoming one of my favorite bands. So that was kind of neat to see them. Or that they were both at the same show like that. So that was kind of like how the tour and some notable things that happened there. I just remember reading and listening and watching to some of the interviews that they did around this time. And I remember somebody had told them that they thought this was like their Sgt. Peppers, and Mike had quipped that he didn't think they were that talented. Few other things. It was a really cool album because, like I said, they branched out a lot. And I know like a lot of people just sort of thought, oh, they're this kind of one dimensional band. They only write one kind of song. All the songs sound the same. You know, Billy Joe can't play guitar. He only knows three chords or whatever. And the thing is, like, Billy Joe is actually a pretty good guitarist. You don't really see him showcase it a lot. I mean, if you go see him live, he does a lot of soloing and stuff, or a lot more than he does on the records. But a lot of people don't realize that. And it was cool to kind of see them show it, to show that they have the ability to write more than just one type of song. So I guess with that, I'll try and get into some of my thoughts on the songs. I really wanted to play this album and kind of go over it the way that I did with my own music, but again, I think that would be a copyright thing, and not that enough people listen to this show that anybody would even know about it per se, but just in case, I don't really want to get sued, so I'll just talk about it. I'm sure you have this album, and if you don't have this album, go pick it up, get the 25th anniversary version and listen to it. Because these are really great songs, and if you haven't heard them yet, you should. So the album opens up with Nice Guys Finish Last. Like I said, it was featured in Varsity Blues. It's kind of a nice high-energy start to the album, and it's a good song. The second song is Hitchin' a Ride, which is the first single, at least it's the first one I remember coming out from this album. And I just remember being excited that they were back. And I also remember staying up late to watch them play this song on David Letterman. And I remember that Paul Schaefer did the violin part on his keyboard. And I just remember them, like, they had these Nimrod stickers all over the set, like on the drums and on the drum riser and everywhere. There were these stickers, and it was really cool. The third song is called The Grouch. And this is a song that I appreciate a lot, like, more and more the older that I get. And it's really just a song about, like, being an old grumpy man and looking back on your life and, you know, maybe being a little bitter about the things that you didn't get to do. And I've experienced that a little bit getting older. I mean, not completely, but I can definitely see, you know, the where he's coming from here. And it's interesting how, like, as you go through different experiences in your life, songs can mean different things to you. Like, obviously I couldn't really relate to that as a 13 or 14 year old the same way that I can relate to it now as a 38 year old, you know. After that is Redundant, and I think this is kind of the same type of thing that, like, you know, every once in a while you kind of get in a rut like that, and it's like you don't really know what to do anymore. It's, you know, and it's relatable as you get older. It is to me anyway. The fifth song is called Scattered, and this is the song I was talking about that he played at New Year's Eve. I think it's an underrated song. It's a really good song, and it's just kind of about, you know, memories and maybe some regrets, things like that. I mean, it's kind of hard to describe some of these songs, you know, versus just listening to them. But I was kind of hoping that I would have other people to discuss these things with, so it wouldn't just be me yelling out into the ether about these things. But, you know, maybe it would be better if you could bounce some of these off somebody in a conversation. But didn't seem like too many people were interested, so the show must go on, and I'll do it. I don't know, whatever, I'll do it myself, I guess. It's kind of the way it's always been. That's how I ended up as a solo artist. Couldn't find a band. So you want to get something done, you got to do it. The sixth song is called All the Time. And I think this is maybe the first time that I heard the word salute. And I always thought that word salute was kind of weird. You know, you see people say it when you go to dinner parties or something, and it's always people that you wouldn't think would say it. It's like, you know, it's not their language or anything, but they say it anyway, and it just looks weird to me. I don't know. I guess it's not weird if it is your language to say that, but the people that I've seen say it, it's definitely not theirs. And I remember also hearing Mike say in this song in an interview that it makes you want to drive fast. And I remember asking my parents if that was true, because I wasn't old enough to drive at the time, but we used to listen to it in the car. They didn't really seem to have an opinion on it one way or the other. I guess it didn't make them want to drive fast. So I don't know. The next song is called Worry Rock. And that was kind of neat because it was another one of those kind of branching out songs. It wasn't just like a straight up 2 minute punk rock three chord song. You know, there's a nice little solo in it. There's some clean guitars. There's a part in it where Billy Joe stops all the instruments and just sings for a little bit. It was just, you know, it was just kind of a straight up rock song. It was a little subtle shift in the style that, you know, you might've heard from them previously, which was kind of neat. The next song is called Platypus, I Hate You, which I remember reading that Billy Joe said that he was an 11 out of 10 angry when he wrote this song. the lyrics actually were not printed in the CD booklet. If you're not familiar with CDs used to have a booklet in them with the lyrics and other little facts about the album, pictures of them recording it maybe, or other things they thought were interesting. I always like to read the liner notes, which is kind of I miss being able to read liner notes because you don't get the same experience with digital music. And it, I always thought it was cool to see, like, they'd always have a section where the band would explain who they are, and you could really learn, like, oh, well, okay, these are who's in the band and what they do and what their name is. And then they'd have a section where they would thank people, and it's like, oh, cool, they're friends with this other band that I like, and like, I didn't know that. Or you'd see, this is the guy that produced the record, which this record was produced by Rob, I'm not sure how you say his name, Cavallo, I think, and he had produced some of their other records as well. Or, you know, it was mixed by this person, or it's on this record label, or any number of other type of information. I remember also as a musician, especially as an aspiring musician at that time, thinking like, oh man, if I ever hit it big, I should have this person produce my record. I should have this guy mix it, or I should, you know, I should record in this studio, or I want to be on this label or whatever. And that was always just interesting to me to read all of that information. And you don't really get it now with digital music the way that you did then. I mean, you might still be able to Google it or whatever, but it's just not, to me, it's not the same. But anyway, those lyrics were not printed in the CD booklet. I'm not sure whose choice that was to exclude them, but there are some pretty dirty words in that song. And I remember Billy Joe explaining that in a newsletter that they would write to the fans, and that actually came in the real mail back then. So that was cool. The next song is called Uptight, which I believe is about suicide. And it's a pretty, I don't know. I mean, to me, it didn't really bum me out or anything as a kid. I didn't really think much of it. Didn't seem like a cry for help or anything. It's just kind of a straight up rock song. Last Ride In is the next song. And this was a real departure from a lot of their usual style, which I thought was really cool. It's got this like surf music kind of vibe to it. And it's got, you know, it starts out with like some ocean sounds, and then you hear, you know, the bass and the drums and the guitar. And then, you know, they sort of pepper in these other instruments as you go. There's like some horns that come in, and there's different types of percussion. And I think there's strings on it too, like violin or something like that. And it's just a really, really nice calming ride, or calming song that's called Last Ride In. And then the next one that comes is actually kind of two songs in one, which is called Jinx and Hashinka. And I remember this was kind of, they had done the same thing on Insomniac with Brain Stew and Jaded, which were kind of like two in one. And I remember like them not really having too many like longer songs like that. But in retrospect, I wonder if that was kind of like a foreshadowing to like American Idiot and 21st Century Breakdown, where they would have these long songs that, you know, kind of twist and turn along the way into something else at the end. I remember in part of the song Hashinka, there's a riff that Billy Joe plays that's like the same chords as Walking Contradiction from Insomniac. And I was never really sure if that was like on purpose or just kind of an accident that they left in there, or like they just kind of went with it, or if it was like a subconscious thing of like, I don't even know where this came from, but I'm putting it in the song kind of thing. Or I don't know. I thought that was interesting though. Then the next song is called Walking Alone, which was another kind of branching out thing because Billy Joe plays the harmonica in it, which is, you know, not like some musical revelation, but it was kind of cool because it kind of went against the style that you were used to hearing from them at the time, and kind of showed them branching out as musicians. I remember the next song after that is called Reject, and I really liked the lyrics and the music in this song. I think it just kind of reinforces the punk rock creed of just being yourself and staying true to yourself regardless of what others think about it. The song after that's called Take Back, which I remember when I heard that, I thought it was pretty heavy for a Green Day song. I still think it's pretty heavy for a Green Day song. I don't think they usually write super heavy music. So that was kind of cool. Then King for a Day, which is about, I guess, becoming a drag queen or something. This was another kind of a different style for them. They had, it's kind of a ska song that got horns in it. And I remember them taking No Doubt's horn players on tour. So that was kind of neat. And this song is just kind of like a shock value is what I got out of it, is, you know. And then after that was a little song called Good Riddance, parentheses, Time of Your Life, which I remember the first time I heard this song. The only way you would have heard it at the time was if you had bought the album. It wasn't a single yet. And I just remember hearing that and thinking like, oh man, this song is, again, it's different than anything they had really released before. And I just remember thinking like, this song is going to blow up when people hear this. And it did. That song is everywhere. It's at everybody's graduation, everybody's wedding. You know, it was on the finale of Seinfeld. Everywhere that you can possibly have an occasion to listen to a ballad like that, you're probably going to hear this song. And I just thought that was really cool. Like, again, that it's sort of like, you know, you hear all these people criticize them, and maybe this would kind of show them another side of the band, that, you know, they're not just one-dimensional punk rockers. You know, they can play, they can and they do play, you know, more well-rounded music. But yeah, that song was everywhere. And then when that single came out, all of a sudden Green Day was everybody's favorite band, you know, which is fine. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I used to try, they call it gatekeeping now, I guess. I was a little more vigilant about that than I am now. But I just remember thinking like, everybody'd be like, oh man, I love Green Day. And you'd be like, oh really? Well, that's cool. What's your favorite Green Day song? They're like, well, you know, I like that song, Time of Your Life. And then they got that other one, Time of Your Life. And Time of Your Life's pretty good. That's a good one. That's my favorite band. And you're like, all right, cool, whatever then. But yeah, I mean, that song, like I said, apparently that sold more than the album did. It went platinum 5 times, probably more than that by now. It was very successful for them. And then the next song after that is called Prosthetic Head. And that's about stupid people. And I know that because, I mean, I know the lyrics of the song, but that's how Billy Joe introduced the song when he played it at the bake sale that year. I still remember that all these years later. I don't think a lot of people, if you're just a casual fan of Green Day, you might not know this song, because you probably just bought that record and played Time of Your Life and then turned it off. But this is the song right after that. And it's very good. It's kind of a, not a ballad, you know, more of a, they got the distortion back and everything. One more thing about Time of Your Life, it was written in 1990, and I remember, or I don't remember, but I read that, Billy Joe had actually kind of, brought up the possibility of including it on Dookie, and apparently they just said, no, it's not really right for this record. And so, is another example of sometimes, you know, songs, even though they're released in a certain year, doesn't necessarily mean that they were written in that year. A lot of people don't really think about that, but sometimes, you know, bands might write a song and sit on it for years, and then all of a sudden it just kind of becomes, you know, relevant, or it becomes, the timing is right or whatever, and that's how they happen. So and one more personally relevant story from this album is, when I was in high school, my friends and I started a backyard wrestling federation. And my character in that federation was the Nimrod. And it was named after this album. I was a punk rocker. And my entrance music were songs from this album. And it was kind of cool because at the time, you know, Green Day wasn't super popular. Not that they were nobodies, but they weren't like, you know, white hot like they had been. And then, you know, Warning came out, and same kind of thing, where it was like, you know, it did okay, people liked it, but it was vastly different than anything else they had done. So it was kind of a polarizing album. And then of course American Idiot came out and blew up. And then 21st Century Breakdown blew up, and all of a sudden they were on top of the world again, and good for them. They're a great band. They're one of the greatest, in my opinion. They're Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. They're amazing. And I think if I ever got the opportunity to work with them in any capacity, that would just be a dream come true. But anyways, enough about that. I guess that's really about all I have to say about this album. I mean, it's a great album. I can't believe it's been 25 years since it came out, but it has. And if for some reason you haven't heard it yet, you should go check it out. It's a great album. And check out the rest of their albums for that matter, but especially up to this point. And then, you know, there's different eras of Green Day, you know. And sometimes I kind of wish, you know, you could have this version of them back for a little bit. But yeah, that's about it. I'm going to maybe try to do these a little more frequently. I don't know. Like I said, I've got that other movie podcast going pretty regularly. I was kind of running out of topics to talk about on this show. And I decided that maybe I would do shows like these where I talk about music, movies, TV shows, things like that, because there's a wealth of material there and I consume a lot of those things. That's actually how the other podcast got started, is I was just going to do an episode of this on Psycho, the movie, and then we just decided to make a whole new show. And so maybe I'll still use this to do other things that aren't movie related. But if you've enjoyed this, let me know. Under the Radar, I gotta remember what my freaking social media things are now. Under the Radar with Travis McLeod is the name of this show. I believe my Twitter handle is Under the Radar PC. Under the Radar with Travis McLeod is the name of the page on Facebook. I think that's it on Instagram as well. Yeah, so anyway, I'm sure you can find it if you look hard enough. I mean, if you're listening to this, you found it. So leave a review, leave a like, leave a whatever you want to do. Hopefully you've enjoyed it and let people know about it. And I'm glad that you're here, and I'm sorry that these are so infrequent, but I hope you've enjoyed this one, and go out and listen to Green Day. And I hope everybody has a happy new year. We've got one more day left of 2022, and yeah, I hope you're all doing great, and I'll see you next year.